This is America Weekend. I'm Mike Bennett. In a moment, we'll be talking with actor, director, and writer Chaz Palminteri about his one-man show, A Bronx Tale. But first, women complain of feeling cold at much higher rates than men, and here is actual evidence. For starters, women's bodies produce less heat than men's. Men generally expend more calories than women, about 23% more, in fact. Spent calories are essentially burnt fuel. The body is a furnace, and a male body runs far hotter. Most of the variance is explained by the fact that men contain much more heat-generating muscle, but even if body composition and activity are accounted for, women's bodies still run 3 to 10% cooler. A good chunk of the energy we expend gets dissipated as heat, and this heat warms our skin, clothes, and immediate surroundings. As walking, talking space heaters, men are much more powerful. Women are also prone to feeling frigid. Thanks, perhaps, to their more limited distribution of muscle, women's extremities run much cooler than men's. A 1998 study found that women's average hand temperature hovers around 87.2 degrees Fahrenheit, while men's averages 90 degrees Fahrenheit. Adding to the chill, an industry-standard formula used by many building managers to set indoor temperatures is based on a 50-year-old estimate of the metabolic activity for a 155-pound male. This translates to a cooler building than most women would likely prefer. If you want to catch a cheater, wait until the last hand, the last semester, or the last week on the job. That's according to new research that shows that people are most likely to be dishonest for personal gain the closer they are to the end of something. Three researchers gave more than 2,500 people more than 25,000 opportunities to cheat and found the odds of cheating were nearly three times higher at the end of a series. Participants were most likely to cheat when they knew it was their last chance to do so. The data also suggests that people cheat at the end because they want to avoid feeling regret about passing up a final chance for personal gain. In one experiment, subjects who were recruited online were told to flip a coin and attempt to influence it with their minds to land on heads. Every time a participant reported the coin landing on one side or the other, researchers switched it up, and they were given a cash prize, and there was no way for researchers to verify if the person was telling the truth. In early flips, self-reported winning flips hovered around the expected 50%, but they shot up on the final flips. In a second experiment, people were hired to grade essays and were paid based on how long they claimed they spent on each one. A secret timer found participants were most likely to lie about how long it took them to grade the final essay. The researchers note that the study can help organizations looking for unethical behavior know when to deploy their limited resources. Hearing bad news before work may lead to unhappiness throughout the whole day. Researchers studied 110 people who were split into two groups, one that watched negative news before 10 a.m., and the other group that watched 3 minutes of success stories. They found that those who watched bad news were 27% more likely to become unhappy throughout the day compared to those who watched success stories. McDonald's has remade the famous Quarter Pounder. The chain recently started toasting its buns longer and increasing the size of its patties from 4 ounces when raw to 4.25 ounces. The 4-ounce patty shrank to 2.8 after cooking. McDonald's also changed how its patties are seared to lock in more flavor. Besides that, McDonald's is making major changes to its menu and business after 7 straight quarters of sales decline. Coming to an office near you, an ID badge that tracks your movement. Imagine a tiny microphone embedded in the ID badge hanging from the lanyard around your neck. The mic is gauging the tone of your voice and how frequently you are contributing in meetings. Hidden meters measure your body language and track how often you push away from your desk. At the end of each day, the badge will have collected roughly 4 gigabytes worth of data about your office behavior. The analytics leader says the minute that you get the report that you're not speaking enough and that you don't show leadership, the next day you should change your behavior. The badges are just one of many data-driven tools for work. The tools range from complex email scanning programs to simple fitness trackers such as Fitbits that measure sleep patterns and movement. A company spokesman says to be able to show you, here's what the people who got promoted do, here's what the top performers do, here's what the happiest people do, and show you that change over time and how your behavior is changing over time is very powerful. Robots are going to steal the jobs of chefs, salespeople, and models. Eventually, that's what they're going to do, researchers say. They came up with a full list of the things that robots are good and bad at and what jobs are likely to take sometime in the future. They found that some professions, such as therapists, personal trainers, and teachers, are safe from robots. But those that require repetitive skills, the manipulation of data, or manual entering of information could see their jobs taken away by the android. Actor-director Chaz Palminteri is performing his one-man show, A Bronx Tale. For those who are uninitiated, tell them what this play is all about.
Well, this is the original play. I mean, people who saw the movie, A Bronx Tale, more people now, because I've been doing the show for a while, but people don't realize that the show started from a one-man show. I did the movie on stage by myself in 1989. Literally, I played 18 characters. I won all these awards, and it was the thing that made me a star. It became the hottest property in the world at the time, and they offered me a lot of money, $250,000, to walk away because they wanted to write a movie about it and put a star on a role, and I refused. And then they went up to $1 million, and I still refused. And then Robert De Niro strolled into the theater 2 weeks later. After I turned down the million, saw it, went crazy, loved it, said it was the greatest one-man show he's ever seen, said this will make a great movie, and as they say, the rest is history, and that's how it happened. From the killing that I saw, I was 9 years old, I was sitting on a stoop, and these two guys who I thought were fighting over a parking space in front of me, and one guy took out a gun, and the other guy, the other guy came over to protect him, and he had a baseball bat, he was hitting his friend, and he shot him, he killed him. You know, I got to be honest with you. People said, gee, my God, you must have been traumatized. And I don't know why, but I really wasn't. I never forgot it, obviously, because I wrote about it many years later. It was always on my mind, and I never forgot that scene. And I did have a relationship with the wise guys from that. So to me, I absolutely do believe that definitely writing about it and talking about it, it became like, okay, it became like a dream now, so it's fine.
And did you always dream of being an actor even as a little kid?
About 10, 11 years old. I always wanted to be an actor, yes. I wanted to be an actor, and then I became a writer too, and then I started to directing. But always acting was my first, yes.
And who were your heroes growing up in the acting world?
Well, I mean, I really loved Marlon Brando, and of course, De Niro and Pacino and those guys, And then finally, when I really worked with them, it was kind of surreal, I never worked with Brando, but I did work with Pacino and De Niro. It was kind of surreal, but it happened. I mean, I just believed in myself that it would happen,
And you always have a summertime party for all the old neighborhood guys. How did that go this year?
It went great. I do it once a year. I have all my friends that I grew up with, all the guys from the neighborhood. We all come over and we have pasta, food, and it's great. We do it once a year, and we've been doing it now. But it's so hard to say this, but we've been doing it now for the past 30 years. Same guys. It's like, a few guys died, but it's the same guys, and we have a lot of fun. I mean, the neighborhood was so much fun. I mean, some of the guys really were in the movie. I put them in the movie. Like that was Eddie Mush in the movie. That was the real Eddie Mush in the movie, And all those guys are real guys, Frankie Coffee Cake, and those were real people, So I think that's why the movie resonates with so many people, because it's a real honest a portrayal of that neighborhood and about my life. My real name is Calogero. I am the little boy. So people who see the show, people who love the movie love the show even more, because the show's a very visceral feeling. It's because I'm the guy, I mean, Alfred Hitchcock used to say there's only three things you could do to an audience. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry, or you can scare them. And if you do two out of three, that's a great movie, But in Bronx Tale, I do all three. In the play, I do. I make you laugh, I make you cry, and I scare you. So, I did it in Vegas, and it became Show of the Year in Las Vegas. So I really encourage people, if you haven't seen the show, you've got to come and see it, because it was one of the only shows on Broadway that I remember saying, people were telling me that there was a line outside the theater after they saw the show to buy tickets again. So,
well, that's quite an endorsement. Now, are any of your old neighborhood guys coming to see you at Ridgefield?
Yeah, and they saw the show at least 5 or 6 times, some of them. They'll be there. They like, when I'm in the area, I haven't been in the area, in a while, but I'm here now in the area, and I won't be here for a while, so now is definitely a good kind of time to come and see the show, but they're going to come and see it again, yeah. They love hearing it. Oh, yeah.
And of course, we hear you on a car commercial for a local dealer.
My Mercedes. My Mercedes is great. I have three of them, you know, because my wife has one, my son has one, and I have one. And Mercedes is the best car in the world. I mean, I do those commercials for Mercedes-Benz of White Plains. Thank you very much. So yes, and it's a great, great car. I also want to tell you that I'm opening an Italian restaurant October 15th, 872nd Avenue, right on, in Manhattan, and it's going to be called Chaz Palatelli's Restaurant Italiano. I'm going to feature my own vodka. My own vodka's out now. It's called BV Vodka, B-I-V-I. So a lot of great things are happening. Yeah, please. I hope, please come on down. I like to see you guys. Be my guest. Come on down.
Chaz Palminteri, always a pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure,
and
guys.
Wish you the very best.
Thanks a lot. Okay.
With actor, director Chaz Palminteri, I'm Mike Bennett, and you're listening to America Weekend on the Envision Radio Network.
Welcome to American Biker Minute. Insurance companies are drooling at the opportunity to download your motorcycle operator habits. Some shiny new motorcycles include a hidden tattletale chip. Before it's too late, rid yourself of the problem. Today on American Biker Minute.
Have back taxes taken control of your life, your bank account, your paycheck? It's time to take back control and avoid tax liens, bank levies, garnished wages, and criminal charges. Take control today. Call U.S. Tax Shield now at 800-524-6201.
Welcome to American Biker Minute. Tattletale black boxes. You know, the ones that rat out your motorcycle acceleration habit to the insurance company. Hole shots, 90-mile-an-hour cruising, steep lean angles, all there for Snoopy prying eyes. Download from inside the box. Examine newer vehicles. An insurance policy for black box inclusion. Before it's too late, rid yourself of the problem.
American Biker Minute.
Your passport to the open road on two wheels.
Where are they now with Ahmad Rashad?
This five-time All-Stars resume is Hall of Fame ready. He's one of only four American-born players to score more than 500 NHL goals. He's also scored more than 1,000 points and collected 2,200 penalty minutes.
Here's Tkachuk, the long shot, there it is. 500th NHL goal for Keith Tkachuk.
So where is Keith Tkachuk now? Keith coaches the St. Louis Blues Pee Wee hockey team and is proud to have his son on that team. He's an investor in Grand Slam Sports, which owns a sports talk station in St. Louis. Keith has said he would like to get back into hockey with the NHL Blues, where he was known for scoring and slugging.
Keith Tkachuk comes down with his Marshall's badge on, and here they go.
Looks like Keith Tkachuk still has some fight in him. I'm Ahmad Rashad.
Tired of high cable bills? Disable the cable with MyTV. With packages as low as $19.99 for four rooms, you can't go wrong. Call now, 888-759-MYTV.